Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast. I am Dr. Liz Murray, the founder of this project, where we have the honour of interviewing 100 women sharing their stories of facing life-changing disease, but at a young age. But we're sharing messages of hope and strength and how they are managing to live well despite this. The podcast is part of a wider charity initiative taking place this year, using art to raise awareness of health. And you can find more information about this on our website. But each episode, we are discussing a different topic on women's health for this year. Your podcast presenters today are myself, Dr. Liz Murray, and Laura Middleton Hughes. And today's episode, we have another incredible voice sharing their story. So I hope you enjoy. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Mortal and Strong with Laura and Liz. And today we have the lovely Tracy. And Tracy is actually our photographer Sammy's mum. And Tracy has a very rare, unique story of living with complex autoimmune disease, as well as an inherited condition which put her at increased risk of heart disease, cardiac problems, and heart failure. And all of her symptoms started at a very young age, and she has a very unique story. So we're very thankful to have you to share it with us.
So we're going to start, as we have done on all our interviews, a little quick fire round. So city or countryside?
Countryside.
Salt or pepper?
Pepper.
A real fireplace or a fake fireplace?
Oh, whatever's hotter.
Probably a real one. Handbag or rucksack?
Handbag.
Photo or artwork on walls?
Oh, both.
Yeah, need a bit of like personality in there, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
Classical or pop music?
Both. Actually,
A hot or a cold drink?
Ooh, both.
Yeah. Everything's both. I suppose it depends where you are, what you're doing.
And what drink it is.
Yeah, crisps or popcorn?
Popcorn.
A hair up or hair down?
Oh, hair down nowadays because of tint.
And sliders or flip-flops?
Oh, sliders.
Oh, well, there we go. We've gotten to know you a little bit better.
Sammy said you wouldn't know what sliders were.
I know what sliders are.
She said, don't ask her that one.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
We're going to go right back to who you were. What were you up to? How was life before any form of diagnosis?
Before any diagnosis, I had three children. I rode my horses a lot. I worked as a counsellor with young offenders, that's where I worked with, forensic-wise. Wow. And I was looking after my mother a lot because she had an illness. She had rheumatoid arthritis from when she was 22. So by that point, she was quite disabled. Mm-hmm. And I was going in to look after her twice a day as well as go to work. three children. And I think, yeah, so it was busy and happy, but I could feel already the pressure rising.
And when, how long ago was this?
We're probably talking about 15 years ago.
Okay.
When you say pressure rising, do you mean within your body?
Within my body. I started, I wasn't feeling as well. I mean, I had a particular year when my youngest daughter, Samantha, got meningitis. She was really ill afterwards and for a long time. It wasn't always easy for her. So you're kind of like, you know, balancing all these balls, really.
So quite stressful.
Quite a stressful time. And obviously, because you work with young offenders, and I did a lot of counselling outside voluntarily. So you're dealing with people, you know, and you do come back with those feelings. You're not supposed to, but you can't help it. Yeah, and I think at that time we went on holiday to France, and that particular time was when I felt like my body was changing.
Okay. And what did you... What sort of changes were there that you were experiencing?
Well, the first was that we went on holiday to France, and it was a really hot time in the south of France, and I was just so cold. I could not get warm anywhere. I felt really ill. Everything just ached. I just felt really, really exhausted. And you try and be like yourself, but I didn't feel myself, and I thought, oh... And I had to admit, at that time, I thought, have I got rheumatoid coming? Because... my mum had it and she has Trogen. So I thought, although it's not hereditary, you're predisposed to get it, obviously. Okay. So, or a connective tissue disorder. So that's kind of what I was thinking.
So you already had an awareness of autoimmune disease?
Yes, because obviously I'd been brought, my mum had had it since she was 22. So I had seen most of her joints disappear over the years. So I was very aware of, obviously, when she had it at that age, there was very little anyone did for any. They just told you got rheumatoid, not rheumatism, rather, and take a pill and you'll be fine.
And we're going back, about 15 years. So how old were you at this point?
I would have been 45. Now you're testing my maths then.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
So still young, still young.
Still young.
Still, you know, in your prime, working with children.
With children. But I think also, even prior to that, heart-wise, I had already started having problems with my heart, and I knew that I was having problems with my heart. And that probably started, I would say, it started around the same time that my real father had died when I was 39. He had a cardiac arrest at 39. So I was only 9 years old. And when I got to 39 and I was already having these, strange things with my heart, feelings, fluctuations, rhythms, all this, I had gone to the doctors, and it was always, no, it's just anxiety, it's just this, it's just that. And you start to think, which I did myself, it probably is. I'm probably overthinking because Dad died. I remember him dying. I remember being taken out of the house when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
So
are you thinking because you're hitting that age that it will happen, or you kind of...
It's just that very aware age, you know, because he had died young, and one of my aunties had died at 21, and the other one had died in her 40s, his sisters.
Okay. So from heart problems?
From heart problems. Okay, for me, also it's very aware that when I'd been a little girl, my dad had died at 39 and his older sister had died, it seemed like... they were all quite old. Do you know what I mean?
And when you get to 30,
and 9 years, and then suddenly I'm thinking, actually, she couldn't have been that old. You know, it's an alarm bell. And even to a point where my grandmother died 2 weeks after my dad, and she was 64. Now I'm 64, I'm 60, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, that wasn't even that old. You know, there isn't. So that's kind of where I was, really.
Okay.
And had your heart investigated at all? Obviously,
I carried on going. They sent me, various people saw me and said it was definitely anxiety. I had a couple of 24-hour monitors, which picked up nothing.
It's sod's law, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen when you need it to happen.
No, exactly. And I would go, and when I was still working, I would go sometimes after a stressful day at work, I would sit outside waiting, you know, outside the school, waiting for children to pick the children up. And it felt like my heart was flip-flopping, or it would go off into this butterfly thing where it would feel like it's stopping, and then it would just boom for ages and then start again.
Gosh.
And a couple of times I fell on the floor in the kitchen because it suddenly, vroomph, And yet still, of course, when you go, no one can find anything on one of those monitors. And it was all very well. Look, you're a size 10, you don't eat badly, you're a lady, the chances are you're not going to have problems. And even though I was saying at the time, well, actually, my dad died at this age and my aunties have died at this age.
So it's obviously in the family somewhere.
And then what happened? How did things progress? Was it kind of a gradual decline or was it a start-stop pattern of events?
It was a start-stop pattern of events. And I actually, when I came back from France with the other ill, with thinking I had rheumatoid, I went to the doctors and I spoke to him and he was, one of the GPs was very, very unhelpful. And he also said to me after doing the blood tests, just because your mother's got rheumatoid doesn't mean that you would.
Oh.
So I said, yes, but I could be predisposed to it.
Yep.
And then that was it. So he said, I didn't have rheumatoid. So I thought, okay, so that's fine. Don't know what's going on, but I felt quite poorly for quite a long time on and off.
So there was no other tests?
Had blood tests, that was it. Then going on probably 6 or 7 years from that, with that track of illness, I went back because I was really ill at that point. My mouth was covered in ulcers. I was not sleeping. I felt very, very painful. My stomach, I was having loads of diarrhea problems constantly that no one could find out why. And I had the test done. And yes, it came up as having a positive ANA test and positive for Lara and Rue. Which then obviously I was then sent to the hospital. Out of interest, I asked if I could have the blood test results from the previous time years ago, and I had been positive for those. I've been negative for rheumatoid, but I've been positive for ANA test for Lara and Rue.
So what are these two things? Sorry.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, it's an antibody, and the body produces so many different antibodies in response to different external infections, viruses. We also have antibodies which are specific for testing different types of autoimmune diseases. And these particular ones are not routinely tested for. You've got to go looking for them. Mm. And depending on the kind of combination of which ones are positive, can help put a picture of lupus or rheumatoid or different types of autoimmune diseases. And they can attack organs, they can attack joints, they can be linked to stuff like Sjogren's, rheumatoid, and rheumatoid, having a negative response, antibody for rheumatoid does not mean you don't have rheumatoid arthritis. So actually, that test in itself, a GP can't then turn around and say, you don't have rheumatoid arthritis. And given those ones were actually positive, and you were so symptomatic, it's unfortunate that at that point you weren't referred. Yeah. And rheumatology specialists at the hospital don't just deal with rheumatoid arthritis. They deal with
everything.
Picture of autoimmune disease, because there's such an overlap between different.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that unfortunately it took so long for you to be referred.
So long. And I just feel the frustration for me was that because of my mum having it and because of working in a field where, as a psychologist, you talk to lots of people who have illnesses, you counsel people who have illnesses. So your medical knowledge is probably
pretty good, more understanding than
other people. And I thought, then I know what I'm looking for. I know what I was listening for. I know what I'm checking for here. But what about all the other people who aren't there to defend themselves, who aren't going to say, well, hang on a minute, I had this, And I felt very, I was really angry. I did feel really angry about it.
Yeah.
Having said that, I went to see the rheumatologist. She was absolutely lovely, really lovely. Very funny going into the rheumatology department, which I had been taking my mother to for probably 18 years, and seeing some of the nurses I had also taken. Yeah. I am here now on my own.
For me this time.
That was a bit bizarre. But she was lovely, and straight away, primary Sjogren's, but when then as things have developed, there's been crossovers with other things, which is why they think I've got bits of lupus, bits of rheumatoid, bits of other things, because Yeah.
It isn't a clear picture.
It is not a clear picture.
Those different antibodies do so many different things.
So I didn't, but she was very positive, very helpful straight away. Got me onto the right drugs. And I have stuck on those. They've moved me onto other drugs at times, like methotrexate, which is a very commonly used one, which I, when I had other problems, because it's kind of the Sjögren's changed, and I've never really had problems with my eyes, which is often a common thing with Sjögren's, dry eyes. You have that. Yeah. My mum did as well, because she had rheumatoid and Sjögren's. So the dry eyes, I don't have that problem. Mouth, terrible. Ulcers, loads. Ulcers up my nose.
Yes.
Wow, okay.
And the nose ulcers, which I will say was quite funny, because when I first started to get those, I went to see the doctor because I wanted to know how I could stop them bleeding. Because at that time, I'd gone out for dinner and I had this dinner eating with ulcers. So then you're suddenly got blood coming out and you're looking like, oh, Jesus.
And I don't know what it is, but even as a grown adult, people just assume that nosebleeds are for children.
I know.
So if you have them as an adult, people get really uncomfortable and you're like, yes, I'm embarrassed because I've got a nosebleed.
Mine will just start. I mean, obviously a different condition, but mine will just...
You don't even realise.
I'll be walking down and I'll be like, oh, my nose is starting to run. I'm like, oh, bagger it. Literally. I'm like, I've probably got one tissue on me. Like, I literally will not leave the house without a tissue on me.
So I just wanted to say, you know, is there anything that I can help, because you know I have a lot of grandchildren, and when they come they're like, why is Nanny's mouth bleeding, or what's Nanny's nose, you know, things like that. So anyway, I went to see, just to see if there's anything, and he said, well, why would your nose be bleeding? I said, because of, you know, the illness I had, and I have a lot of mouth ulcers, and when I get a flare up I usually get ulcers, I get colitis, which comes with that,
and the bleeding,
bleeding ulcers, bleeding nose, and my nose is very sore. He said, he was significant, a persistent nose picker. And I said,
oh, for goodness sake.
I'm like, you know, a late 50s year old woman, not a 10 year old boy.
I'm not sitting there my finger up my nose.
Probably not, really, I'd say.
Oh, for goodness
sake. He went, well, I just thought I'd ask. And I thought, why? Why would you ask?
Oh my goodness.
It's like, how many adults do you know?
A persistent nose picker as well, not just a frequent one. Persistent. That was, you know, I thought, what does he look at me and think, oh, there comes a persistent nose picker. Yeah. So anyway, so you know, the answer to that was Vaseline.
Oh wow, okay. So when you actually got a diagnosis, when they actually told you this is what it is, did you feel relieved to actually have a name to it?
I felt relieved to go on the medication, because I think once you go on to the medications, I mean, you have a few weeks of the horrible thing, which we all do, of the horrible rashes, illness, you know, everybody who's gone on to medication, that's a big form, is, you know, you get through that first bit.
So there's a period where the side effects of those medications are worse than a flare. So if you start them when you're well, you kind of question why on earth you're putting yourself through it.
Yeah, but definitely.
Then your body gets used to it after a while, does it? Or like you
sometimes you do, and other times not. Like there's different certain things. The similar drugs.
The methotrexate, they took me off because I was really ill with that. Yeah, I just could not breathe.
And some of them are short of chemotherapy drugs.
Are they?
Yeah, they're chemotherapy based drugs in nature.
And that, yeah, that wasn't great. But also weirdly, my mum had the same problems. It ended up with she had clots on her lungs from the methotrexate. But the other drugs, I mean, they really do help. They go from making you go from not being able to walk around very much or doing anything to actually having a life back again.
When you look back at your old life prior to any of the symptoms, where do you kind of stand now in terms of how much you can do? Like energy levels, are they lower? Are they...
It's different, because obviously when I had that, I had the harp thing coming in on the side.
Of course, yeah.
And that was also, that was coming up fast. And I suppose it would have been, I'm trying to think how long ago now, probably 8 or 9 years ago, there was a point where my mum was very ill and I was looking after her. And my sister, who is my older sister, but not that much older, I have to say, she was going into hospital because my father had an aneurysm. So she was going in to visit him. I got a phone call from the hospital from my brother-in-law to say, I'm sorry, there's something's happened. And I thought it was from my stepfather. He said, no, it's Karen. We walked into hospital and she had a heart attack. So she was taken straight in, and she was taken straight to Papworth, and she had a triple bypass.
Oh, lucky for her to be in hospital.
So lucky. I mean, she was, bless us, was saying, well, I was in Tavon Garden Centre. I wanted to go back and get my garden furniture. I said, no, you're off to Papworth.
I mean, as you say, if you're going to have a heart attack, do it.
That kind of triggered all of the family to have to finally, someone listen, to go and have the test done. And they found that we've got the family, which I cannot remember the word for, hydro, you will probably as a doctor remember hydro. It's a thing that your body naturally produces the cholesterol.
Which is why the heart issues occur.
Why the heart issues occur, which they know about now, but wouldn't have known years ago.
So that's not actually linked to the autoimmune diseases. That's a separate issue.
Just wonderful genetics.
But you had it all, it was all happen at the same time, I mean.
So that was, coming in on that side. So from that point, they were aware, but still nothing was being done about it. And so it wasn't until... They then found out that I had atrial fibrillation, which was bad at some time. So that was, put on drugs for that. I also started to develop angina. And then I was taken into, obviously, I have an angiogram, and I had 3 stents put in, which, he said there isn't any reason at that time. He said it's obvious there was a problem, because, like with my sister, she was in her 40s. She was a size 10. She was non-smoker, non-drinker, vegetarian. Why would a healthy woman at that age? Yeah. I can't say that I was a non-drinker.
Like a glass of wine, that's fine.
But I was still quite a small lady at that time. Yeah. So all of
and
those
still
things.
Still young and still, still young.
Still in my early 40s. So
just atrial fibrillation, for people listening, is an irregular heart rhythm.
Mm.
And your heart is normally regular and it has a set beat. Atrial fibrillation, it does a more erratic beat, and that can start stop. It can be induced by coffee or alcohol, or it can just happen as a natural phenomenon. And it does tend to be more in the elderly, but because it's doing an erratic rhythm, it causes it to weaken.
Yes,
right. Okay.
And this is where, and when it sounds like you're having this kind of fainting episodes and sensation of your heart early on, it could have been that it was coming in and out of AF early on in life. And if you continue with AF not knowing and not having the drugs to help it, it can weaken the heart.
So that's when you can be more at risk of heart attacks.
And heart failure.
Because there was one point when I would
heart
have been about,
the key one.
I don't know, probably just turned 40, maybe a bit younger than that, when I actually called an ambulance out because it was so bad. The speed of my heart was so bad. I literally was laying in bed, which has happened loads since. I mean, it's quite a normal occurrence now. But at that point, it was the first time my husband had felt it, and he could feel my heart beating through the mattress.
Horrible feelings.
Yeah, it is. And I did phone an ambulance because I thought, this is bad. And they did come out and they said, yes, you're very, very tachycardic. So you need to keep calm and have a nice warm drink and a warm bath, and that will help.
No.
And they left me.
Are you joking?
No.
Oh my goodness.
So I thought, okay, well then obviously they're not worried, so why would it's just, but this was before the final actual to say yes, you have got the atrial fibrillation. But this was before. But
you're obviously now able to see a bit of the funny side of it, but like, it must be quite scary because you just don't know when these things are going to flare up, when your heart's, if you do have a issue with your heart, you're going to constantly think, is this it? Is the heart attack coming? Is the heart failure coming?
It is frightening, and I do think you live with that. And I have
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The thing about anything like this, and both of you would know, you talk to people and you can make light of, but in the middle of the night, when you're on your own, you are in it on your own. And it doesn't matter how nice and how kind and how much you love all the people around you, how much they love you, you are in it on your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that fear is deep inside you, and it doesn't matter what age you are. But it's obviously more frightening when you're young. But I think the thing is that I've got to the age that I have now at 60, when I feel so privileged, when I've watched so many of my family die so young.
But even so, you're still, you know, you're saying that, but like, I know. You should have another 30 plus years. Like,
I would, but yeah. I still feel that, but it doesn't stop me being frightened and think, yeah, actually, I don't want to do that because I don't want to leave the kids yet, even though they're growing up. I don't want to leave my grandchildren yet. I don't want all these things and all of that fear.
Do you get checked regularly? Like, what's the...
Well, what's kind of happening at the moment, not so much. I mean, the autoimmune stuff is really a backseat to the heart thing now because I have been diagnosed being in heart failure. I had a heart attack probably now 2018, 2019. Okay. Because with the Sjögren's and the mixed connective tissue, I get shingles quite often. And I often get, I don't know what it's called, but is it intercostal something or other, which is like a blind shingle. So you have all the pain and the stuff, but it's actually internal. Yeah.
Wow.
So I've had that a couple of times. And this particular time, I had terrible pain. I felt really, really ill, terribly sweaty, all over the place. Really couldn't get out of bed for quite a few days. Just felt awful, was throwing up constantly. Doctor said, no, it's definitely this shingles thing, whatever it's called. You know, stay in bed, look after yourself, blah, blah, blah. And then a couple of days afterwards, I felt really bad. When I started getting up, I just couldn't walk anywhere. So I actually took myself off to the A&E and they did blood tests and I had had a heart attack. So I just actually hadn't gone to hospital.
Oh my goodness.
So from then on, they were more careful. And obviously...
That's what it took for you to actually have a heart attack
And so then the atrial fibrillation has been bad, and it was bad then.
Yeah.
But then at that point, they tested me, and I was in atrial persistently in it, which I knew. And then 2 years ago, it became worse, where I had a summer where I was pretty much bedbound. My heart rate, I was going in every other day to have my ECGs done. Like one day she said, oh, Tracy, it's better today. It's down to 145 today. I went, oh, that's good.
And were they trying you on rate?
I was on all, I'm on drugs. All the drugs, yeah. All the drugs for
so
it.
So what should it be? If you're saying 148. What's...
It should be somewhere between 65 and 85.
Is this the beats per minute that
yes,
we're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, yeah.
148 resting.
Yeah, resting, and wow. That was on a good day.
And did they not discuss ablation or other?
No,
more...
they discussed cardioversion. So mm-hmm. I was booked to go to have a cardioversion. Then I was put on the emergency list. He said, yes, we'll see you within a month. 2 years later, I still hadn't heard. So I then contacted, several times I contacted them. But then we had COVID, we had, you know, everything going on. So I'm not, you know, it's one of those things. And by the time I went back, actually, I had gone through the worst of it. I'm still in atrial fibrillation permanently and I will not come out of it.
But now the damage is done.
But I actually survive. The thing is that when it used to be paroxysmal, which is when it comes in and out, I was much iller. A lot of those times, my heart rate would be 220, 240, and it would be like that for 4 or 5 hours.
Really?
So when I've had been to hospital, I am lucky. I was felt really, really ill.
I was going to say,
now it stays kind of like in an okay. It's not in rhythm, but it's the rate's low. So I can live life. So I've chose to stay where I am. So having had been there and then moving on from that into having it persistently, I made the decision when I went back to see him. Because there was lots of apologies about, I'm sorry you got missed, you should have been in emergency, we should have seen you. But now I have been in persistent AFib for 5 years. The cardioversion is not going to work now. It's just, there's no way it will work. And he's been honest saying that.
So that's an operation?
It's say when they shock your heart back into a rhythm.
Right.
And the chances are it may not have worked then because it's not it's just a quick fix thing. So he said that he understood what I was saying because I said I would rather be in this persistently because I've already got heart failure and enjoy my life than I would be being where I was before when I have these terrifying bouts, you know, maybe once a week, maybe twice a month or whatever, but they are terrifying where at the moment I'm just get a bit
breathless
and yeah, and I can manage and, you know, I have to sit down or stand, you know, whatever. So that's where that was left. Can't have an ablation. They won't want to particularly do that because of the connective tissue disease and the healing. The same way as I've got a very leaky mitral valve in my heart, which they also said they would only operate if it was life or death. I think from a point of view of having illnesses, you do get frustrated, obviously. There is loads of things, and I think that you would like to do. And I felt like with all of the medications, your body changes so much. I mean, I've 3.5 stone, 4 stone heavier than I was when I was younger.
Yeah.
And it keeps getting more like that. And then your body's not, you know, you don't know who you are anymore. Your confidence levels go. And it does take your confidence away.
Because it's an invisible disability.
It is.
And I mean, you know, someone meeting you right now, you look beautiful and radiant.
That's very kind of
you. Look what you are. You're absolutely glowing. And you're such a bubbly personality and such a lovely spirit. You know, you would have no idea what was going on sort of beneath that. And
swearing, that helps. Hell of a lot of swearing.
I mean, you're welcome to swear on this podcast.
How do you pull yourself out of those bad days where you're fed up with it? Because, you know, with a chronic illness like that, everyone has bad days where it becomes too much.
I think I'm very lucky to be in the position I still have the horses. Because, funnily enough, I've had horses since I was a little girl and I've had them all my life. And there were times when, and it did help me, when I first was first ill with the heart problem, seriously ill, and then the lupus kicked in quite badly, or that area of it kicked in at that time. I was going for a lot of ulcers, couldn't go in the sunshine at all, my rash was everywhere,
allergic to the
it was
sun.
Just horrible summer, just everything was, you know, and I thought, I can't do anything with the horses, I can't even walk over to the yard properly. I took up painting again, because I had actually gone to art school when I was young. Mm-hmm. And I started painting it, and I had my first exhibition that summer in the gardens at Stoddy Lodge. All my outdoor paintings that I do. And actually, it changed. It made me think, you know what? Your life's not over. You can do this. I painted an awful lot at the time, all different feelings. I mean, I've got some really horrendous paintings. Also, some nice paintings and some very dark ones and some really jolly paintings.
I want to see them.
And like my husband came in one day and I was painting, it was all like black and red. And he was like, oh, this isn't a good day.
What mood is she in? What colours is she in?
It's so cathartic, isn't it?
So cathartic. Honestly, there was paint all over me. I looked, well, I'm not a tidy person, but my God, was I dirty.
But painting is really relaxing.
Really relaxing.
To get that anger out and that frustration, it just feels like you've had a purge.
You do feel like you had a purge, and that was so good for me. And then from that, I started to feel better. I also, this is the most random thing in the world. I'm a very weird person. I've always loved guinea pigs. So I thought, I said to Sam, I'm going to have a couple of indoor guinea pigs in my art room. Because I've got an art room.
Or to help carry around the paintbrushes.
Well, just like in one of those indoor long cages with an open top. Lovely. Love guinea pigs. What did I do? Go to the rescue centre. Let's say within 2 weeks I had 14 guinea pigs.
You had a female then, yeah?
Well, no.
Or you
that's
had a pair.
What I had. I brought 4 little babies and I thought, oh, bless them. No. They can't. I can't just take 2 because it seems unfair. So
they mated.
But then they had, no. Then they had, they were only girls. When I went to pick the 4 babies up, they had all these little poor rescue guinea pigs that had been used on like a guinea pig breeding farm.
Oh, no.
They were all old and knackered and looking very poorly, all these little lady guinea pigs. So
you took them.
I took them.
Oh my goodness. That's
because
adorable.
I needed to have something.
So you have 14
guinea
pigs.
I love that. I think that's just wonderful. I think that's amazing.
So So anyway, so that was had my art room. I mean, we're now down to 4 guinea pigs because they're all quite old.
Did you get any more? Or was it 14? Like
no, we had 14, but one. No, we had 10. But sorry, one of them was heavily pregnant already, so she had babies. So then we had Reggie and Ronnie because they were the only boys we had, so they had to live separately, obviously. So I had all those in my art room until I couldn't actually have any room to paint because there were so many guinea pigs everywhere. So that was it. But yeah, I did do a very similar thing when I had my heart, when they diagnosed my heart failure, because I like to go on my own to hospital, stupid decision to make. But when I went and they actually said, yes, you know, that you are in heart failure, my consultant is lovely, but he also treated my mum and my sister. Mm. So he knows the family history. He's really nice. When I go in and I go, I'm fine. He goes, no. Okay. Is that Tracy fine or really fine? Yeah. You know. So I went to see him and he was very kind and said, yes, you know, you are in heart failure. This is why the fluid, because I was building up with fluid everywhere in that summer. And he was really nice to me, but I came out and I felt okay. And then I kept thinking, and then I went to Marks and Spencer's food hall by Asda. And then I thought, I was going around it thinking, oh, I'm actually in heart failure now.
It started sinking
and I thought, that's a bit weird. I didn't think I'd be in heart failure. And then I was going around with my little food shopping trolley, you know, and then I actually went into the loo and I burst into tears in the loo. I sat on the loo seat, not with the lid down. And I just was crying. And this really nice lady who was really, really kind came in and she could obviously hear me crying. And she said, are you all right in there? And I said, yeah. I'm so sorry. I'm fine. I said, I just had a really, you know, not a nice diagnosis at the hospital. She went, oh, dear, is it cancer? So I said, no, it's not cancer. She said, oh, dear, my coach. She said, oh, no, what is it? And I said, oh, it's heart failure. And she went, oh, my husband had that. So I said, did he? Is he all right? She went, oh, no, he died last week. And I was like, this is such a black comedy moment, right?
Honestly, you have to find the dark humour.
That would have been a sketch, wouldn't it?
And you're just like, I don't know if I want to hear that.
But then she went at the end and she went out, but you'll be all right, I'm sure. Yeah, thanks.
Probably should have just kept your mouth shut.
So that day what I did, I go to the pet store next door and I thought, oh, I was so awful, so miserable. I need something young and cheerful in my life. You know, this is like your mad moment in your head. This is how my mad moments in my head go. Buy something young and cheerful. Kittens for sale. Went off, bought 2 kittens and brought those. So came home crying in the car to my husband saying, hi, I've got a heart failure and I've got 2 kittens which I don't even know why I brought.
So was this prior to the guinea pigs or after the
guinea pigs? After guinea pigs.
So they're not in the
guinea pigs are now in the garden.
Right. They've got their own. I might use this excuse actually. I've been to the hospital again. There's another one to the list. There's another animal.
Sammy's now got the cats. She had to have the cats because I've got 2 in my house and I couldn't go for any more room for anymore.
But you know what? I can see the logic in that because I have a similar thing, but with plants. And if someone dies,
you buy a plant.
I buy a plant because it brings life back into the house. And
probably more sensible to buy
I plant it in the garden so that I'm like kind of, it brings new life. And when I look in the garden and I think, oh, you know, that one's now thriving. That was for my grandma, or that one was for a pet, or that one was for so-and-so. And, you know, so I can see the logic there of needing to see something life and joy and joyful.
Yeah, definitely.
But if you listen to this podcast and want to go out and buy something, make sure it's maybe not
a plant is probably better
moving.
Than
it. Yeah, probably not a good idea. So I'm not encouraging people to do any of that. And I have kept my pets alive, all of their lives.
And they've probably brought you so much joy.
Yeah.
They have. And actually, to be honest, the guinea pigs at that time, I love animals and I love being outside, but I couldn't do that. So they really did bring me a lot of joy. I spent ages feeling, you know, and I was painting, I had to sit down, I'd look, hello, little ones, you know, they had all their names.
That is lovely. There's something therapeutic in nurturing someone else or something else.
Yeah, and definitely.
Channeling that energy somewhere.
And I think, well, all of the people in this podcast, it is such a weird journey that you go on when you have an illness, through all these ups and downs and the highs and lows and the relationships that you have around you, obviously.
It impacts
it does, part of totally. You, doesn't it? And it is, and it's weird when you start going. And I think when you start going through that process of all the medicine and the machines and just laying there, and you're just thinking, oh, this is it then. Mm. This is this little road I'm on now. And that is really a lonely place. That is the times, I think, when people are there for you, but they can't be. We can so much more easily advocate for other people, for our family, for our mums and dads, our sisters, our brothers, whatever, than you can for yourself. And the iller you get, the less you can. And we all have this thing about not being moany, don't we? Oh, I must moan about it. And, you know, that is the other thing.
Yeah.
And I think, it's very handy having Sam, because I talk, and she does understand the tiredness. She understands that point of view because of her having been ill for so long. I think also it can be a negative thing because of my mum having her illness. She was such an incredibly strong woman that there's times when I have felt I just can't match that. I couldn't do how she did this and how she portrayed this, because it's actually beyond my capabilities to.
But we also have to remember that we're not like the same person. And
we're not.
Everybody's different, and we cope with things very differently. And it's very easy to, like you say, look at someone and go, well, why am I not coping as well, or why am I not dealing with it in this way? But she was from probably a generation where it was shut up and get on with it.
Yeah.
And very much, I mean, even yourself, I'm sure, you know, you feel a little bit like that. And it's starting to get better with people being able to sort of say, do you know what, I'm actually just not feeling good today.
Yeah.
But if we could all say that, and there are people you probably speak to and you don't want to moan, but you know, actually, if you said, I'm feeling crap today, they might say, oh, me too.
Yeah.
You know, my kids are playing up, or something's happening, because everybody has a problem, but we're also British and being like, we're fine.
We're fine.
We'll be all right. And if we were all just that little bit more honest, you know, it's not going into an hour's conversation when you bump into someone in the street, but it's just going, you know what, no, today's not a great day. I'm not going into details, but, you know, it's not.
But I think her life was very different for mine, because she was a widow for one thing, had to fight to keep us all together. And so she just had to. She had to knuckle down and deal with it. I mean, it's not much different now, but she was self-employed in those days. There was no financial help if you were self-employed and your husband died suddenly. You could not even claim the widow's pension if you were under the age that she was, because she was suddenly 37.
Wow.
You couldn't even claim that. So there was no help financially. So she just had to get on with things. And I had seen her, and I'd grown up with watching her doing all these things, and I kind of felt like, oh my God. I mean, literally, she used to, her ankle joints were coming out the weeks that my dad had died, and she had to go back to work. She just had an operation. She had to go back. I was bandaging her hands up at night. She was kicking her ankle back in its socket when she was working to keep going behind the bar. All these things, and she managed. She kept going, and I think I kept thinking about those when I first got ill, thinking, yeah, I'm nothing as bad as her. But that isn't how she would have said. She would have been saying, you know, and she did say much, no, go back and get done. I would never have ended up like this if I had someone, you know. But I could advocate for her when I took her to hospital, but I found it very hard for myself.
That's hard, isn't it? And a lot of people do feel that because almost, and I think that's where the term kind of medical gaslighting comes into play, where it only takes a couple of trips to the doctors or the hospital to try and speak up and say, like, phoning paramedics, my heart's racing, and for someone to go, you're fine, you just need a hot bath, or you must just be picking your nose, that's why you're bleeding. And it shuts you down, and it shuts that inner voice down, thinking, well, that just makes you feel like a hypochondriac. If they're not bothered, then why should I keep speaking out? Because when someone dismisses or belittles your concern, it makes you question the reliability of what it is that you're saying, and it silences that inner voice.
Yeah, and it did definitely with me, and I should have done something a lot earlier. And I know that looking back now, and I think anyone else,
they have
got to fight and not just, you know, but It's so easy, isn't it, when you look back in hindsight, but people do, and I think the younger generation need to stand up more. I think it is particularly women that a lot of the male yes, doctors are.
This is why we're doing the podcast.
Yeah, I know, and the attitude towards you, you know, and as you say, it is still going on, and it has to stop.
It does.
It really does have to stop.
And unfortunately, we're hearing so many stories of this, and people need to feel empowered to trust their own bodies, trust their own symptoms, have awareness of what conditions do exist so that they feel that they can start being an advocate for themselves. Because it's so important. It is just so vitally important. And then especially when a time when our healthcare system is struggling, you know, that is the reality of it. Mm. And particularly since COVID, you know, things are very, very different. You need to have the confidence to know how to politely and correctly, you know, you don't need to be rude to be an advocate for yourself, you know, but having that level of assertion of, hang on a minute, I disagree, could I have a second opinion? Or repeat, like going back and saying, I'm still not happy, is there nothing else that can be done? Yeah. You know, it's understanding you can do it politely. Being an advocate doesn't mean, you know, kicking the doors down and kicking and screaming.
No, definitely not. It just
means saying, look, I'm concerned here, and I don't feel like you're listening to me. If you could go back and say to yourself 10, 20 years ago, what advice would you have given your younger self?
I would have definitely made myself stand. I would have stood up for myself. I have much more confidence in myself now than I did then. And I think it is that thing, as you say, that when with your the way that we are, we don't talk about ourselves. We feel like we're being moaners or, you know, groan, you know, whatever, if we have a problem. And when you go and say, no, actually, this is how I'm feeling, you feel like you're whinging about it, or you're just being hysterical or something, you know, all those things that drive you absolutely mad. And this, yeah, exactly. And I think, no, Be that person who's strong. Don't just say, no, it's, you know, this is okay, because it's not okay.
Yeah.
And I think not only that, there's situations that arise in the journey that you go on when you have a long-term illness, is that you have to also be prepared to say, no, I don't want that done at times, because actually that isn't the right thing for me, and not be pushed. Because I know, like with my cardioversion, I had a really kind of almost difficult GP who was saying to me, no, you need to go and have it done. Are you refusing treatment? And I said, no, I'm not refusing treatment. I want to talk to a cardiologist who I know is in a better place to make that decision with me, because I am choosing not to have it done because I don't want to take a chance. You can't guarantee me that it's going to work. You also can't guarantee me that I'm going to come back from that shock treatment worse than I went into it. You are, should be allowed to make your own decisions, because it is your body at the end.
Sort of moving into a slightly different direction, you know, after everything you've gone through and that kind of process of coming to terms with these things are incurable, you know, the highs and the lows, when you get up in the morning, what is it that makes you smile and brings you joy? What keeps you focused and positive?
The animals, to be honest, because I think when you have animals, it's a bit like when you have children, you have to get up because somebody needs feeding. I was always brought up to think, right, you do children and animals first, and then adults. Anything under 10 or any animal gets done first. That was what always was a rule in my family. Regardless. Your needs come last. So all of those things, the grandchildren, my daughter, my oldest daughter rings me every day on the way to work. Always has done. Tell me what's going on in her life, ups, downs, lows, happiness, whatever is going on. She just always, you know, rings on the way to work in the morning. All those things. I think that is so precious. And that is the things you get up for. It is the things that make the world better.
That's lovely.
To be honest.
We have absolutely loved talking to you today.
Thank you.
You've been wonderful. Brilliant. And it's really insightful to see how, you know, this condition does affect your life. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing it.
And it is, you know, obviously you're Sammy, our photographer's mother, you know, and I can see where she gets so much of her positivity and empathy from. So yeah, it's been wonderful.
Thank you.
So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.